Hi everyone, it's Sal. In this episode, we talk about our expectations. I've recently started at what I thought would be my dream job. Don't get me wrong, it's pretty great, but I was also quickly reminded that all that glitters is not gold. If we're not careful, expectations for ourselves and of others can lead to great disappointment and even resentment over time. Don't forget to email us at thepurposepatch@gmail.com or rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to The Purpose Patch, where our intention is to help you grow a life you love.
Join us on our adventures as we discover the fun and joy in taking action.
Hosted by
Sal Mack
and Luz Vargo, two ex-corporate slaves who've decided life is worth a bigger roll of the dice.
Each episode will put the theories to the test with practical actions you can follow too.
What could possibly go wrong?
Hello.
Hello, Sal. How are you?
Good. Back for episode 8.
Episode 8. Far out. We're almost at double figures.
I know.
Who would have thought?
It's great. Awesome.
Congratulations to everyone who's stayed with us so far. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome.
Welcome, welcome. So today we're going to discuss expectations.
Yeah.
And how they can lead to possibly some resentment and unhappiness in our lives. I think we've discussed before, or we've mentioned that I had applied for a job that I was really excited about.
Yes, a couple of episodes. Sal was waiting to hear whether she would or would not.
It's like a kid on Christmas Day.
You were.
Yeah.
It was very exciting. And remind people who haven't listened to the episode. I remember you called me and you were like, Lou, I have just seen advertised my dream job. It ticks every criteria in the book.
I mean, I was on my own yellow brick road. It was like I was headed to Oz and nothing could stop me.
And little Dorothy.
Oh, it's just I had my ruby slippers. It was all happening. And I think it was really interesting because during the interview process, I so wanted to work with what my idea of this company was. Mm. And I thought it was such the ultimate opposite to what I'd been doing. And it was just going to be my absolute dream that I didn't even ask any, what I would say, sort of sensible questions.
Yeah, yeah.
So I really didn't want to know almost.
Do you think you realised that or were you, is this a?
Yeah, I think I realised it.
Yeah.
I didn't raise anything I normally would, like about how things actually operationally worked, who were the other people in the organisation, salary, didn't raise any of that. Just didn't want to know. It was like I'd found, you know.
Utopia.
Yeah, I'd found it.
Utopia with a paycheck.
So, you know, like expectations were pretty high. And I think the fact that I had, as a trade-off, accepted a huge pay cut as part of it just led to even more of the expectation.
Yeah.
Because it was like, if you're going to do that, it's going to be bloody perfect.
Yeah, it's going to answer every other problem in your life.
Exactly. Yeah. And it better be just everything you hope and more. Mm. So it's fair to say day one when I turned up, and had the realization that there were no, for example, no IT department.
Yeah.
I was handed a Mac.
Mm.
And I was like,
so Sal, I've worked in a
I've never used
no
a Mac.
IT department for ages. So, you know, I listen to you and I'm like, well, yeah, welcome back to reality, Sally.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, I've been in these huge companies with huge resources and huge departments. And so I just think it was just a shattering of the illusion that everything would be great and perfect. It was really interesting. And I think what's interesting is how much it panicked me and threw me, and I really questioned everything again.
Yeah. But, you know, generally, like, Sal, the last 12 months, and again, for the benefit of those people that might not know, you left London now how many months ago? Almost a year, really.
It was last November.
Yeah. So a bit under a year. But you've been experimenting, like, you know, you went and followed your curiosity and did a yoga retreat in Bali. And I remember you saying something really interesting to me that you're like, oh my gosh, even in Bali, the yoga retreat, there's still politics.
And egos.
And egos. And I think especially around, you know, we're people who might be considering change or doing something different, that experience of sometimes the grass is not always greener. So no. Going into sometimes a period of change, you know, and managing expectations is a really important part.
The whole grass is greener thing, all that glitters is not gold. Mm. You know, so I did go into huge fear and panic.
Mm.
And equally it was quite hilarious because it's an organisation that's all about emotional intelligence.
So if you could have a flip out at any at any job, this is the place to do it.
This is the place to do it. But equally there were people that, as I discovered when I joined, that were really burnt out and really quite, you know, in a startup environment, you don't, as I said, you don't have all the resources and the support. So it can be pretty stressful and everyone's really on the line every day.
Mm.
There's nowhere to hide. I think in those bigger corporate places, if you just take your foot off the pedal, and I always tried not to, but quite frankly, if there were weeks where you just weren't into it, just pretend to be busy.
Yeah.
Really.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think that was quite shocking as well to find people that were quite stressed and maybe not in the best place mentally. And that was like, what? I thought I was entering this land.
Cruisy, happy.
Or not even cruisy. I don't want it to be cruisy, but my expectation was there'd be no stress or anxiety or politics or egos or power. You know, it's just not true because wherever humans are, that will result, whether there's 8,000 people in the company or 8.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting one because you've had it on a quite a big life change expectations. When you were talking to me about this, I started to think about expectations in my own life, and I guess I'm someone who I often feel I get myself into trouble. I get excited by new opportunities, but even just on a very everyday level, you know, what I expect of others, you know, often leads to this idea of resentment. And I think it's an interesting topic because, and you and I wanted to explore it today, because expectations, do they have a place? Like sometimes they are what drive us to achieve things, but a lot of the time they ultimately just lead to disappointment and us feeling frustrated with where we're at.
Oh, there's this great quote. So I was doing some research on this, Psychology Today.
Mm.
There's this quote that says, expectations are premeditated resentments.
Let's just sit with that for a moment, shall we? Let's just let that seep in. Say it again, Sal.
Expectations are premeditated resentments.
I think for, you know, that probably sums up a lot of what I end up feeling. And my
give us an example of a daily one.
A daily one. It's often such little things that I don't notice until they've happened as well. This one's going to sound really stupid.
But that's what we're trying to capture.
Like most things on this podcast, I come in with a stupid inane example.
You've got a lot of daily things that stack up on you, I think.
Yeah.
Mine tend to be quite catastrophic and
Okay. Let's let me come out with a ditzy girl one. But like, I'll get dressed in certain outfits if I expect I have to have a meeting or something. But if that doesn't happen, I'm like, oh, what a waste of an outfit.
Right.
Let me find a better example.
So you're resentful at maybe at the people, like, don't you know that I got dressed for this?
Yeah.
I think that's a good example.
Do you know what it is too, for me around expectations? There's probably a relationship with control for me on it. So I'm planning out how I think a day is going to go and then... So there is, I think, sometimes with my expectations, this idea of things haven't gone to plan.
Mm.
And it's like, oh, and that my preparedness to deviate from that plan.
Mm.
Oh, another one, like I used to do, and I'm sure mothers do this a lot for their kids. I remember when I'd stay at my ex-boyfriend's, I'd sometimes clean up his room if it was in a real mess. So he might have gone off of a shower. I was like, I'll just clean up a few things, fold a few clothes off the floor. And I remember, come on, lots of people do this. This is not mad. Well, but
all my boyfriends have been cleaner than me. That's all.
But so he comes back in the room and he doesn't mention it. And I was like, what did I expect?
Am I the fairy?
Yeah, but
why did you do it? What was your motivation to do it?
Well, this is what makes me think. So my motivation, I think in my head, I expected him to come in and go, whoa, I can see my carpet.
But what's the ultimate?
Thanks, Louise.
I love you even more.
You're the most amazing girlfriend I could ever have. I will never leave you. But he didn't value that because he didn't keep his room clean. So you know, but I think we often do things for other people.
Mm.
And
or make decisions on our own behavior. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'll wear that because of this, or I'll, instead of just, yeah.
Yeah, well, the reverse of that, on the flip side of it, my mum came in and I a couple of weeks ago and she'd vacuumed my house and I didn't realise. It was only later. No.
Jill wouldn't have liked that.
She had a bit of, she was fine about it. But people do often do things and we just don't know, you know, and I think the point is that maybe when you are doing something for someone, you do it willingly and you're not expecting anything back. You're not, they say that about, if you're doing something for someone else, it should just be a free, I don't expect anything in return.
When is it ever that?
It never is it?
No.
Like, you want to thank you at the very
least. That's interesting because it almost makes me nervous when people are too, like, I actually think I stop you sometimes.
What
because
do you mean?
Because I find that you will very much, I think you're very generous, but you'll say, an example is last week when we'd had breakfast and you said, oh, where's your meeting? Oh, I can just go totally out of my way to take you to Royal Parade.
It's my pleasure.
But Lou, if I'd let you do that and I repeatedly let you do that, I was more conscious of what you had on. So what do you, where do you have to be? So maybe if you can drop me halfway in the direction, that's great.
Mm.
But I think if you do that on an ongoing basis and then say, like, I don't have a car at the moment, so I can never offer that back to you. Like, that's something that could potentially start
become an issue.
Yeah, it could start to be like, where it's like, do you think that you think enough about the
probably
impact
not,
on you?
Probably not. Sometimes not the long-term consequences. But I think I do a lot for my friends or for other people because I genuinely value these people in my life and I want to do things for them. It's probably why I'm quite discerning with my friends as well sometimes because you want people, you want to do things and be generous and do it for people who you know value it. So, but I suppose you're right. I guess done repeatedly longer term, it does sometimes come at a cost.
Yeah, I think we all need to be a bit more aware of what it is costing us.
Yeah. It's slightly different treatment of expectations. I mean, you started off this episode talking about expectations and going into a role and I guess expectations of others and the relationship with self and what that means. It's slightly different, isn't it, with expectations. So I guess this issue for both of us is manifesting in slightly different ways.
Yeah.
But still.
But equally expectations of life. I mean, we were talking about money yesterday.
Mm.
I would say we've both got a pretty warped sense on that because of what we think is a normal amount to earn, what people around us earn, what, you know, I think we've lost some perspective or it's easy to lose perspective on that and the expectation of what you thought you might have by a certain age or how you might be living.
Ah, definitely.
Huge.
And what you're going to do at certain times in your life.
Yeah.
Like the big one is like, you know, I'm 34 and single. Like you don't actually think that. I never thought that growing up.
Yeah.
Or a whole lot of stuff around the milestones and at what points in life that you will have made it to the place with the white picket fence and part
if
of...
If that's where you want to go, but...
Yeah, yeah.
It's
well, often you, or sometimes you get to the white picket fence and realise you don't want it either.
That's more likely.
Yeah.
Is going, well, it's a bit like me with this job. So now it's been a bit of time. It's been about 6 weeks and it's actually... It's all going to be fine. I'm actually really enjoying it. But I just had to totally readjust what I thought it was.
Mm. Yeah.
It's not the salvation.
Yeah.
It's a much better suited job, I think, and company.
Mm.
And I feel energized and quite good in it. But it's readjusting.
So this month, if we're going to set a little challenge around this to sort of work on this issue of expectations, which you've had to come to terms with your job. I mean, what kind of things do you think help you? What are you going to keep practicing?
I think I've got a pattern around, so I seek change out. I want change. I'm quite brave in taking change on.
Mm.
But then I think I automatically panic in the first moments and want to go back to familiarity. And I also double guess myself a lot.
I've never heard that expression, double guess.
Double guess. Second guess. I just made it up.
No, I like it.
It's a good one.
I like it. Coining new terms here on the podcast.
Oh, we're so good at that. Mm. So I think it's going to be for me as well. I tend to sort of, you know, because I was texting you and probably five other friends, panicking. Mm. I was like, shit, oh my God. So I would like to get better at sitting with some uncertainty and understanding that is my reaction. So what are some better ways I could sit with it and process it before freaking out?
I think I'd like to work on my expectations of other people. And we were having this conversation recently, and again, it actually involved my mum, because my mum is really, really good at, and she is a doctor, so maybe it's because she's often seeing this with patients and it becomes, I don't know, but she's a very pragmatic, practical person. And she's frequently said to me when things, you know, I complain for the umpteenth time about someone at work who's driving me crazy or a friend who's done something. And she says, Lou, you know this about them. Just expect and, and move on. Don't place unrealistic expectations that they're going to stop doing that if they've got a repeated pattern of behaviour. Change your behaviour. So,
and also, they're not setting out to hurt you.
No.
I think that's the thing. I think we take it personally.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that person has not done something for me back because they're trying to be awful.
Mm.
Or they don't love me, or they don't care, or it's like not true. I think it puts yourself at the centre of everyone's life a bit.
Yeah, well, that's what we all do, don't we? Isn't this world created?
It's all about me.
Orbiting around us.
Yeah, totally.
I think that sometimes it is quite liberating and frees you of kind of having to make a reaction, and the reaction, which is normally like getting incensed or enraged or annoyed, just to kind of go, this is what that person does. Don't expect them to do something different. And then, you know, it puts it back on you. I don't know, it just frees you to not have to do that. I don't know. I think that I find with mum, whenever she does that, let it be, yeah.
Just let it be. Don't go into it.
I'd like to practice that, because I think that there are some people in my life that the same things sometimes come up on a repeated basis.
Yeah.
And it gets me in a little tears.
There's nothing worse than being in that mind loop.
Yeah. And to be honest, it's hurting yourself. It's not actually hurting them. Because
they wouldn't even know you're thinking about it.
Well, yeah, as we know, I don't confront people very easily.
No.
So generally,
I
am getting a bit better. Purpose factor is helping. But I think it often is me just getting enraged by something, behaviour.
I think I've had a massive thing around, if it's not perfect, it's not worth doing or investing in.
Mm.
Yeah. There's a perfectionism thing there again. We've mentioned that before. But it's almost like,
well, uncertainty too, because most things aren't perfect.
This is the problem.
I'll spoil the illusion.
I know.
There would never be the perfect time. So it's, or the perfect job.
Place.
Or the perfect person, or the perfect relationship,
yeah.
Or the perfect friend, or the perfect, yeah.
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 Or the perfect me.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Let's go out into the world.
Yep.
Okay.
Bye.
Yeah. Part two of expectations. I'm expecting this is going to be a fantastic follow-up. Sally, what about you?
Great expectations.
Don't peak too early.
Don't peak too soon. How'd you go, Lou?
Not bad. Okay.
Look, better than dating?
Better than dating. Yeah, I think most things in my life are better than my love life.
That's great. That's a good start.
This is an ongoing one. I guess, so I've had one example where I have been practicing just managing my expectations and letting things go. As you might recall, Sal, I was going to be talking, I wanted to kind of manage my expectations of others, sometimes not expecting people to change or to behave the way I think they should.
They should. Like,
listen to my behaviour. Careful of when you say should. Yeah, we're all on our different paths, fighting our own battles that often people don't know a lot about. So trying to be tolerant of other people's eccentricities or perhaps just quite normal behaviour that I find odd. I'm working with one person quite a lot at the moment, and they're super negative, and I think that could be the byproduct of some frustration on another issue. So probably there's a basis to some of the negativity, but it makes it really difficult in a team sense when you're working on a project when everything starts with a negative as opposed to how it could be better. You know, I can be cynical at the best of times or negative, but on the whole, especially around others and in a workplace, I try to always be positive or at least find something funny.
Or at least fake it.
Or at least fake it, exactly.
Why can't he fake it as well as he can?
And, yeah, so that's really challenging. And, look, it's not as, Sal, as it's not personal. He does it with everyone. So it's – and also, too, there's kind of – probably an acceptance by others in the workplace about this behaviour that I just have to get used to. Yeah.
So, well, a bit of that's just how he is.
Yeah. And as I said, like there's probably, you know, good reasons and Lord knows there would be lots of things that I do that frustrate him because no one's perfect. But
so how have you done?
I've just noticed that, yeah, different working styles. So here's a situation, yeah, where he's not going to change and I'm probably not going to change too. So I have practiced what I guess my mum always says and just accept it. Lou, you change your reactions. So even saying that and acknowledging that I find helps me. And I've also just found ways to not work in their pocket the whole time.
Basically so, avoiding it.
I work from home. No, I work in the other office. I've expressed it to, you know, someone at work that can also change how we work together. So, but I think too, I'm a big rat for just acknowledging that and say and not putting the expectation on him to ever change or not trying to orchestrate someone talking to him to make it his issue to, do you know what I mean? I think you could easily make this, I could go to a manager and go, hey, look, this is a problem and I think you need to change and we'll talk to them about it. Like I haven't gone down that route because I kind of go, you know what, it is what it is.
You're not fueling fire.
I'm not trying to resolve the issue, I think. Right. That's it. And it's probably
would you have done that before?
Certainly with some things, yeah. And sometimes I think it's just counterproductive. So, yeah, it's a funny – this is a funny example, I guess, because it's still a frustration in my life. But for some reason it's a livable frustration that you just – and also I
as so someone, it's acceptance.
Acceptance and finding humour in it.
Yeah,
you know,
that helps.
I've started to kind of joke around about it a bit and that does help. It helps you see the lighter side of things. So,
do you know what reminds me? So I had this boss – I don't know, about 2 years ago, who was a really much older and much wiser man. And I didn't believe it at the time, but now I see it so true. I was trying to control, as you're saying. There was this quite scheming personality in the team. There was this other woman that I felt was slightly going behind backs on things and all these dynamics. And I went to him and sort of laid them out and said, these are all the things we have to fix and these are the, you know, and I really got a bee in my bonnet about it and wanted to control it. And he just looked at me and said, Sally, I hate to break it to you, but wherever you work, there will be that sort of personality. What someone will be like that. Someone will be negative. Someone will be scheming. That's just life.
That's true. And it's not, you know, it's not up to me to control this situation.
No.
Let it be what it is. Yeah. And it's
arrogant, actually.
Well, also true with workplaces. Like it's different to people that you have gone, I'm going to choose the 5, 10, 15 people I want to be in a room with. Like workplaces often bring together this, you know, disparate array of personalities
and
then force them to get along. And I think that's unrealistic. I think that people don't need to be in each other's pockets or friends with everyone in the office. There needs to be respect.
Yeah.
And I would always respect. But, you know, I think it's just that acknowledgement of this person doesn't have to be my best friend. I see them every day, but it's like it's not.
Well, it's a boundary thing for me as well.
Yeah.
So if there's someone super negative that I'm around at work, I've just found I used to probably listen too much and give them too much.
Yeah.
And try and solve it a bit. And now I just try and create. It's almost like a fire. Instead of fueling it, don't give it air. And I learned this from my friend Hayley, who's brilliant at this. She's really good at listening to things. And then she'll just say, oh, okay, there you go. Or just not give it anything.
And not give it. Well, I just think it doesn't give it air in your own head either.
Exactly.
Especially for someone like me who is prone to thinking.
Bit of a spinner.
Solid
spinner up
it
there.
It stops the thoughts.
Yeah.
So that was, I think it's been positive.
Okay.
It's one step.
Well done.
One small little drop in the ocean for my expectations.
You're going to go with the man on the moon quote there.
Oh, really? One small step for mankind.
Yeah. One giant leap for Lou Spargo.
Yeah, it is a pain, a big one.
Yeah.
Sal, how about you?
Yeah, on mine, it was interesting. So I've totally settled into work now, which is great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, feeling good.
So through the period of uncertainty?
Well, not completely, but I think I've written down some of my worries and I've had a chat to my boss and just feels like I needed to give it a bit longer than a week to go to into catastrophizing it. But it's really funny with me because I've realized something I do in life. As soon as I've just been through, okay, great change, great upheaval, thought I got what I wanted, panicked, then wanted to go back, come through it, now feeling quite good, my mind immediately flicks to what's the next change? Okay, boring. Like now, as in not with the job, but in life. Okay, I want to move back to London.
Oh, right. That's you know,
bomb.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So you haven't been here. Been back a year.
Yeah. So that came up.
Wow.
And
during the really, so when did that actually come up? Did that come up while
when I started to feel better?
When you start to feel better.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very strange. So, and I think what I've realized is I just do this all or nothing thing. I do this kind of, I think I'm chasing like distraction or, I don't know, the expectation that life there is better. And if you actually think about it, my life is no different whether it's lived here or in London. There are great things about both places that are awesome, and I have great friends in both places.
Maybe it's just about starting a new hobby here, Sal.
It's exactly. I think but also if I did that, I'd spend a ton of money doing it. I'd uproot myself all over again. Like it's, so anyway, I sort of sat with that instead of starting to tell everyone that I was going to move back to London. Which I'm sure you'd have taken well.
Well, you know, especially when I've just been trying to get you just from Sydney to Melbourne.
I know.
So suddenly that would make the kilometre, the distance almost insurmountable.
Well, it's just a bit silly. And I think, you know, my reaction in those moments is, well, that's what I feel I need to do. So let's go. Let's just pursue that. And instead I just wrote about it and I did a bit of a what's behind this.
Yeah.
So what's actually behind this? And I think it's often for me about distraction. Like let's have another big change so I can distract myself and be busy and dramatic. And
well, also too, with every change, you know, this that honeymoon period for a little while, and then you realize it's the same.
Like
what are you really running from?
You're still there.
Yeah.
So then I've realized, you know, I do absolutely love London. It so feels like home, and I miss the people there and going to the theater all the time. Those piano bars, like all those things.
The piano bars are coming here. Don't worry. You don't need to go to London for the piano bars.
I've mentioned it like 50 times. Anyway, the point is I was thinking, what's a more creative way I could still spend some time over there?
Yeah.
And can I spend like a month every year over there? Or could I, you know, be a bit more creative?
Living the dream.
And the company I'm working with has a headquarters there. So could you work for a couple of weeks? Or like, these are all questions. So instead of going, okay, let's be totally black and white about it, all or nothing thinking, why don't we think a bit more creatively?
And manage that expectation and see if we can manifest it in another.
Well, and also realize my high expectations around other locations are really actually true. They're just another way to distract myself from maybe things I don't want to think about as much.
I really like, though, your process and talking about needing that process around change and stopping to reflect on it, because like anything, that just helps you and enables you with your next step to kind of apply some of that thinking.
Yeah. But also I had this realization a while ago, actually, because even when I was in London, I'd constantly say, oh, actually, now maybe I'm going to quit and study psychology, and that means I'm leaving. I'm off. So I'd tell everyone, and I, particularly my friend Kaz, I sort of took her on a roller coaster with me. I don't think it's that. I think it's sort of unfair to play that out on friends and people close to you.
Oh, I do it all the time.
I know, and I don't think it's fair because I think they're then thinking, oh, well, what does that mean for my life? And you're just going to leave, but then I don't do it as well. Yeah. So they've just come through the roller coaster.
Yeah.
And I forget that that impacts other people.
Mm.
I only think about myself. It's like...
Well, see, I use conversations with friends to thought process, which is...
Do you think it's always helpful, though?
Yes and no. I think that I'm a pretty stubborn person. It's funny. I'll ask everyone in my life often their opinion on when I'm considering a change or something or doing something or have whatever's coming up in my life. And it's a way to... I do actually really enjoy listening to different viewpoints, but ultimately I'll do what I want to do.
Mm.
And I think that that's about me taking the time to work things through. And I think good friends are really good. Like you're particularly great with advice. I think everyone will have certain people in their lives that you feel are a bit more of an unbiased sounding board because even unbiased sounding boards have always got an agenda because we don't operate in a vacuum. We've got life experience and we've got a relationship with that person. So our opinion is always coloured and biased, I believe, in some way. So I think whenever you're asking someone for advice, you've always got to be aware of that. But I still think you can get great inspiration and also, you know, others can force you to think about things in a different way. You in particular, Sal, what I was going to say is that, like, you're really good at not necessarily giving the opinion but then asking the questions back. So what do you think's behind that thought or, you know, why is that coming up again? Or so, yeah, so I hear what you're saying. I think that too if when you're in a state of flux and you're
panicking
a bit,
yeah,
it is tricky. And at times if I've kind of talked too much about something that then a month later is a non-issue,
yeah,
you have put people through the ringer.
It's like if
but
you
that's
shared...
what good friends are for.
Well, I would argue I do it too much. So I am trying to write things down because there's actually, I'm reading some Brené Brown at the moment.
Yeah.
There is a lot of research that says in order to make sense of things that we can't understand that come up, writing it helps you create the narrative or the draw out what's behind it. So for me, that
forces your brain to do something.
Yeah, it forces your brain to connect what the hell is going on. Mm. And the thing that I want to learn more as well is not to follow every impulse.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like a 5-year-old. Oh, I feel that. That must be right. Let's follow that.
It's like a sugar-fueled...
Yeah, we haven't had any sugar today. That's upsetting.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah, all right.
There you go. Well interesting. Look. Some interesting things came up there with expectations.
Lot of expectations and assumptions, I think. I think they're linked.
Mm.
So
I'm glad you're back, though, enjoying your dream job.
Yeah. Yeah, it's back to the... I know. I think I panicked a few people. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Try not to do that in future.
Very good. Until next month, Sal.
Next month. Bye-bye.